It's Friday. That means it's time for the official free-for-all, because you know what? It's felt like a free-for-all all week. But we're 1 week past the announcement of what has become a controversial aid package from USDA, and we're starting to get some of the much-needed details. Wiesmeyer's going to be here. He'll have a rundown of what we've learned today.
Live from the pillow-killing floor via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, it's our Friday free-for-all. Panelists Jim Wiesmeyer, Sean Haney, and Pam Johnson join us. And right after the news, Jennifer Shike updates us from the world of pork. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lorre.
I think what we're starting to figure out is it's not just people that are feeling a little stir crazy, a little cabin fever, a little this, little that. It could be our pets as well. Is that true, Davis?
You know, I turned my back literally for, I don't know, 30 seconds to get hooked into this radio doohickey stuff here.
Yeah.
And I turned back. I'll tweet out the picture. My dogs have been hard at work while I'm trying to get the broadcast ready. It's absolutely ridiculous. Check your Twitter. There's a photo forthcoming.
Good boys. They're no, good boys.
Don't encourage them. What are you doing? I'm running out of pillows.
Oh, my goodness. Here we are, dude. It's Friday.
It is Friday. Does that even mean anything anymore?
Do you realize, well, not really. Do you realize it was this week? It was this week. It feels like it was a month ago, but it was this week that crude oil futures traded to a negative $40.
Yes.
Unbelievable. We're going to talk about that today on the free-for-all. Of course, the livestock issues and the slaughterhouse issues and the labor issues. We've got to get into that. Those details of the aid package from USDA. I don't know if people are going to be real happy with some of the details that Wiesmeyer's got, but we're going to have the details nonetheless.
Okay.
Okay. And the pay caps. The pay caps, boy, that has been a big topic of discussion. It's going to continue to be for the near term. We've got Jennifer standing by. Let's go ahead and get to some news quick.
Sure thing, Chip. Well, jobless claims notched their third consecutive weekly decline, and studies show roughly 1 in 6 workers in the United States have lost their jobs since mid-March. The 4.4 million people who filed for unemployment insurance last week brings the 5-week total to 26.5 million. Yeah. Chip, that's roughly a 16% share of that workforce that we saw at its pre-crisis peak back in January. In a research note, ING said, quote, "This leads us to yet another sobering statistic. Less than half of working age Americans will be earning a wage next month. In an election year, this means that the call for politicians to reopen the economy is only going to get louder, irrespective of the health advice." And just, Chip, anecdotally, it just seems like both candidate Biden and President Trump are just saying the goofiest things that they can possibly think of. What politician are we going to turn to? I don't even know where to begin with all this. Unemployment's getting pretty bad, though. I'll say that.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. Keep going here.
All right.
The total being over 25 million.
Yes.
The total being over 25 million over the last, 5 weeks. That is something that is going to take months and months and months to recover from. We can't forget.
Well, the U.S. House voted in favor of the latest $483 billion aid package, and the measure will now go to the president's desk, where President Trump said he will sign the bill this morning at 11 a.m. Central Time. The legislation would replenish the Paycheck Protection Program, as well as providing funding for loans to small businesses. The package also includes $75 billion for hospitals and other health care providers. House Ag Committee Ranking Member Mike Conaway said, quote, "While additional help for America's farm families will almost certainly be needed, this bill does extend a critical interim lifeline to farmers and ranchers who are struggling." Meanwhile, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer is looking ahead to the next round of funding, which Democrats want to be, quote, "big and bold." Chip, Archer Daniels Midland announced it will reduce corn grind for ethanol and furlough workers for a period of 4 months. The company says it will idle production at its dry mill plants in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and Columbus, Nebraska. Meanwhile, Continental Resources has ceased production in North Dakota. and shut in most of its wells in the state's Bakken shale field. According to Bloomberg, the producer also declared a force majeure on at least one of its contracts this week after crude went negative.
Right. This out of China.
Go ahead.
Real quick. I think it's 75 plants are shut down, 71. And this is out of, I think the number's right at 200 on the ethanol side.
200. Yep.
Yeah. And I think it's 75 have shut down and 71 have slowed down.
Well, China's ag ministry expects cotton area there to fall 0.5% in 2020, while a planting intention survey by China's cotton reserves company predicts a steeper 5.1% decline. And I saw something, I believe it was earlier this week, that retailers with an eye toward cotton are noting that nobody's buying spring clothes right now. Demand has just completely fallen off.
Right.
Yep. And in a somewhat related note to no one's buying spring clothes, the Wall Street Journal highlighted a report that found Americans are cooking more at home, sure, but using less shampoo, deodorant, and other personal products. I can attest to that
Stop it, sir.
It's absolutely true. Unilever reports citizens are using those personal products 11 fewer times per week. I tried to do the math on that. Like, what might be the mix? Are we still using deodorant and less shampoo? Or I'm not really sure. Chip.
Oh, that's crazy. That's crazy.
It's getting stinky down here.
I'm telling you that the soap, shampoo, toothpaste, deodorant consumption here at the Flory Ranch has not backed off at all.
Oh, that's good to hear. Well, you're outstanding in that way, then. Good for you.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks, Davis. Let's bring in Jennifer Shike. Jennifer is the editor of Farm Journal's Pork. Jennifer, it's been a long week, hasn't it? But let's look forward. What are we going to be focused on in the week ahead?
Well, you know, I think several producers have told me this week that they're really watching how these plants will be coming back online and at what capacity. And so they're trying to think ahead and make decisions about, you know, what they're going to do. And granted, they keep telling me it changes every hour, or at least every few hours. And so, you know, hopefully the plants will be able to give them some insight. You know, I think they're looking at ways to continue to slow down growth, move hogs to empty buildings, find alternative ways to move pigs. You know, doing whatever they can to avoid making those hard decisions. And ultimately, they're watching out for each other. They're concerned about their friends. And there's some hog producers that are even having kids participating in virtual pig shows this weekend. And so that's one way a few of them are being distracted right now.
Virtual pig shows. That's the kind of resiliency that you expect from farm families out there. That is really good stuff. How's that going to work?
Well, basically, they take videos of their kids showing their pigs, and there's certain rules on what the videos need to be like. They send them in, and then they have the results online. And there's one show actually this weekend where they're going to be showing the pigs kind of in a matchup. So they'll be like four pigs on the screen, and you're going to be able to watch it, and they'll take two to move on to the next round.
Fantastic.
Until they find their champion.
Fantastic. I absolutely love that. Thank you for finding that story out there, Jennifer. We sure appreciate it.
No problem.
All right. That is Jennifer Shike. Jennifer is the editor of Farm Journal's Pork. We got the free-for-all coming at you next. Wiesmeyer, Johnson Haney on AgriTalk.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Clarafly Larvicide, your feed-through fly control solution.
Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Bear Plus Rewards. Sign in and start earning at mybearplus.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk and the free-for-all, everyone. I'm your host, Chip Flory. One of the campaigns at Farm Journal that we've got going right now is the Farm On campaign. It's capital F, capital O-N, one word, Farm On. Take a picture, post it on Twitter, put hashtag Farm On, or if you would like us to post it on social media, send a picture and maybe a short description of what you're doing, where you're from, stuff like that. Doesn't even have to have a picture. Just send us a message about what you're doing to Farm On. Just include Farm On in your message and text it to 31313. Pam Johnson, Iowa farmer up in Northeast Iowa, joins us right now for the free-for-all. And the reason that I went with the Farm On at the start there, Pam, is because, oh my gosh, I made a trip to the landfill yesterday, my second one since my wife has been off work. and I couldn't believe the number of planters out in the field. It was unbelievable, Pam.
Yeah, it's great. Conditions are great. The weather's been great. We've missed the rain, so we're rolling hard, and it's good to see everybody out and be able to get some work done, and it really helps your mental ability too, so.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, the guys are talking about field conditions, dirt conditions, like they haven't seen for at least 5 years.
Yeah, we were working a field across the road the other day, incorporating some manure, and my son said, "This is the best I've ever seen this ground work up." And I think he was 10 when he started working over there. So Maybe the best conditions ever here.
Wow. And that applies all the way down into southern Illinois. It's not that way everywhere. I don't want to give that impression. I mean, there's some guys down in southern Iowa that have consistently caught moisture that are a little grouchy because of some field conditions. And then you get over into Ohio. There's some spots over there too. But generally speaking, I mean, I don't know what we're going to see for planting progress on Monday morning, but it feels like Monday afternoon, but it feels like it's going to be pretty significant.
Well, you know, a farmer never likes to brag about field conditions because it can change in like 20 minutes. So.
Yep. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Okay. Let's bring in Sean Haney, Real Agriculture, Real Ag Radio. How you doing, buddy?
Yeah, I'm doing good, Chip. I'm glad it's Friday. I've been looking forward to discussing all these issues. There's a lot of them.
Yeah, oh yeah, there certainly is. And let's get it rolling. Jim Wiesmeyer, Pro Farmer Policy Analyst. Jim, how you doing, man?
Another big week. I'm trying to add up the $9 trillion of assistance that the Fed and Congress and the White House has signed off on. That's a lot.
$9
trillion. Yep.
$9 trillion. I saw Senator Cruz from Texas on Fox Business this morning, and he was basically saying, listen, we're proving that we can't buy our way out of the crisis that we are in right now. What has been allocated maybe will be all that will be allocated. Jim, your thoughts there?
Well, the fifth package that begins the debate as we speak is going to be a lot rougher to get through because everybody wants to add on, Jim.
Yeah. Yeah, everybody wants to add on. And
a lot.
And add on a lot, exactly. But let's go back to that aid that was announced a week ago today, late in the afternoon, and Secretary Perdue had an 8 o'clock start, 8 o'clock p.m. Central Time start on the press conference. Maybe, yeah, it was a 9 o'clock start?
Yeah. 9 o'clock Eastern Time.
Yeah, so I mean it. Everything helps, Jim. But some of these pay caps, they've been taken as an insult in some cases.
Yeah, you want a mostly bipartisan urging to change it. You've got it on that subject, especially when it relates to dairy meats and the specialty crops. They really need to revisit that. And USDA could do that administratively, Jeff.
So who lobbied for that?
who lobbied for it to take place? No, I think that was part of USDA's plan in order to stretch the money to make it go further, because Purdue, I think, erringly did not use a portion of the $14 billion out of CCC funding that was replenished, but because he can't use it until July, forward at the earliest. But I think had he used that, they could have really stretched that program out.
Like, it doesn't take a lot of math, and you don't need to know a lot about cattle feeding. If you got a 25,000 head yard in Nebraska, a cap of 250,000, it doesn't help you at all. Like, it just seems to be like a real, real error of judgment.
Covers the losses on like 700 head.
Yeah. And dairy, it's a joke for the big, for the efficient, bigger dairy producers. It's a joke.
Yeah.
And pork.
It'll be changed.
How confident? You said that with a lot of confidence, Jim.
Absolutely. Because, you know, logic, you may not believe this, but logic usually eventually prevails in D.C.
Okay. Interesting. Well, and one of the things was that I found interesting, I think it came from out of the hog industry. They said that at the pay cap that was on, they wouldn't be able to allocate all the funds that were allocated for hog producers because of the pay cap. Is that right?
Well, here's an inside one, Chip, for you. I don't know whether they ever held the call, but the CEOs of all major agricultural banks, including Farm Credit, was supposed to get on the line with President Trump this week to tell him how important this constraint was relative to the payment caps. That's how significant it is.
Unbelievable. Wow. Wow. Okay. Yeah, it does feel like these are going to be changed. So the everybody's going to be making their case again, Jim. That's what that means, and saying that if there's going to be some sort of a pay cap, there's going to be some big numbers coming out there on pay caps going forward, right?
Yeah, but you know, I don't know about eliminating the entire payment cap, which is part of these letters that went from both the House and Senate. You know, that can give you some, you know, pretty big numbers. But we have ethanol wanting their assistance,
sure,
and other commodity. I mean, you know, pork producers, even though they got it, I think it fell short of what I know it fell short of what that industry needed, and some what Purdue called extraneous people are coming up saying, hey, you know, our system needs help here, let alone in this new package that both Trump and the and Pelosi and I think Schumer wants infrastructure. And then we're talking big time, as opposed to majority leader in the on the Republican side in the Senate, Mitch McConnell wants to go slow because he's finally talking about the rising, deficit, Chip.
Right.
And don't forget about, you know, some of the, and I'm not, this isn't a criticism, but this whole program does not necessarily address some of the other issues that we have, which is being able to have adequate slaughter capacity during the pandemic right now, that I think is the most urgent issue for pork and beef for sure. And also, you know, for some people, it's, you know, I think it's, there's a lot of people questioning, what do we want the packing? What strategically, what does the packing industry need to look like? Do we need more smaller packers? Do we need more robotics in these packing plants? Those are all big questions. I know you guys are probably getting lots of calls from the audience as well.
Yeah.
Well, and also it's a health crisis first, right? And yes, it's an economic crisis, but until we solve the main issues of the health crisis, if we're going to get these packing plants and everybody else back to work, we got to have testing. It's the same drumbeat over and over and over. Let's spend more money getting that stuff done and making sure those workers are protected so they show up to work, so farmers can move their livestock and consumers don't go in a store looking at empty shelves.
Right. You know, we mentioned ethanol being ignored in it. I'm sure that Iowa Ag Secretary Mike Nagy, if he's got an opportunity, I know he's listening, and he might be looking at his radio screaming, don't forget about the egg layers in the state of Iowa. Because a lot of the eggs that are produced, and we're the largest producer of eggs in the country, A lot of those eggs that we produce go to the liquid egg market, so food service primarily. That demand, you guys, just evaporated overnight. And
and lambs not in the program either.
Lambs
there
not
are
in
a lot
the program
of people that are not in.
Exactly. If this is going to be comprehensive, Jim, they got to throw a bigger. Oh, geez, they got to throw a bigger net.
Purdue has wide flexibility on who's involved in this program.
Yeah, you know, they threw the biggest net they've ever thrown, but it needs to be bigger. We're going to be back. More of the Free For All in just a moment.
This season, while work for you may have changed, our season is underway. American agriculture, farms on, for our family and yours.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Brian, some of the support that we were seeing in corn and soybeans from the idea that China would be refilling those state-owned reserves, it's kind of sliding away from us here at the end of the week. What's going on?
Well, we did have daily sales today, quite a bit actually, on corn and soybeans, both to Mexico, corn and beans, and China for beans. But that news is not translating into buyer interest. Like you mentioned, we had 3 days up in soybeans, 2 days up in corn, and it has completely ended here with the buyer interest into the end of the week.
Yeah. Yeah. It may just be a case of risk off going into the weekend, do you think?
Well, I think in this environment, traders just aren't willing to do anything more than mildly cover short positions. We saw that, like I said, for 3 days in beans and 2 days in corn, and that's the end of it for now, at least.
Gotcha. Okay, we've still got record high boxed beef prices, but these futures are under pressure today.
Yeah, just diverging prices. Box beef shooting up, cash cattle down, the futures down hard. We've got April futures limit down in live cattle this morning. Just a rough finish to the week. New contract lows there in the April contract.
Yeah, and over in the hog trade, it's actually mixed.
Yeah, the May contract sharply higher. That's because of the discount to the cash, and so what we're working with there is just some corrective trade. I think when we get out into some of the deferred months, somewhat of a mixed tone there. The June and July are under a little bit of pressure and some strength in the far deferreds.
All right, have a good weekend. Thanks, Brian. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. Still side dressing corn with a Coulter bar? Upgrade to 360 Y-Drop for your side dress bar to boost nitrate uptake. Details at 360YieldCenter.com.
Yeah, just don't do shots of Lysol, right, Haney? Let's get past that. We're not doing shots of Lysol over the weekend.
I'll tell you what, if you thought that some of those press conferences were more of a TV show meant for ratings, I'll tell you what, yesterday might have been the epic event of the year. That was a very odd situation. The tangent the president went down in terms of what he thought could be possible cures. FDA out today cautioning Americans not to use the drug that the president had been promoting previously out of the hospital. Also talking about injecting disinfectant into your bloodstream. It was a very odd day yesterday.
It was weird. And he was asked, he was looking at Burks and was like, is there anything out there like that we could be doing? Is how they're kind of playing. But boy, when they pull that quote and just put that quote out there, it sounds like he's saying, could we use that internally? And no, let's not be
like you first, right?
Yeah. Even Lysol had to come out and say, listen, people, do not use this product internally. And Yeah, when they felt the need to do that, that was something else. There's one more thing. Welcome back to AgriTalk. It's the free-for-all. Pam Johnson, Iowa farmer, Sean Haney from Real Agriculture, Real Ag Radio, and Pro Farmers Jim Wiesmeyer. Jim, before we move away from aid and so on, what's the latest bipartisan proposal that was out there? I'm looking for the details of it right now, and I'm having a hard time putting my hands on it. But it's a bipartisan proposal for what, another $55.0 billion for USDA? Jim, take your off of mute.
It's a $50 billion funding for USDA. I think it's more of a message bill than okay. anything else, Chip, because there's no getting around that the Commodity Credit Corporation is going to need to be replenished and increased unless they want to see agriculture obliterated here. So I think it's a direct message to USDA and others that we're going to help you, refund and replenish and above more. You had, I believe, Zippy on AgriTalk earlier this week, and he said if you took the current borrowing authority by CCC, which is currently $30 billion capped, adjusted for inflation, it would be $67.5 billion. Yeah. Yep. I think you're going to hear more of that, Chip.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Zippy said it on this show earlier this week. So there's going to be requests for big numbers out there. Pam, the organization that you once led, the National Corn Growers Association, seems to be more interested in supporting the industries that support, that represent corn demand. Have I got the right read on that?
Yeah, because without them, we're nothing.
Right.
Right?
Absolutely.
I mean, until we get the livestock industry back and up and rolling and the ethanol industry, we have so much demand destruction out there that I don't think we've seen the bottom of what prices look like. We thought last year planting was a little bit concerning because you had to decide which crop you were going to lose the least money on, and then the MFP payments kind of healed people up. And, this is not sustainable, right? We have to get back to some kind of demand. And, I read where big oil now is pushing to get, clamoring that they're not getting their oil exported to China. Well, it's time to listen to more than just some of the voices that carry the most clout because they have the most money.
Right. Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Conditions at the slaughterhouses, we've been talking about it for weeks on AgriTalk about how it's a top priority and should be a top priority, and efforts need to be taken. Now, there was a press conference of the Meatpacking Workers Union, the biggest one that is out there. Yesterday, there were some demands in the press availability, including slowing down the line, because that is what is where the pressure point is for the plants that are still operational. But John Harrett, the news director at Farm Journal, was on the show with us yesterday afternoon. He listened in on it. They had some workers from the slaughterhouses on the press availability, and for the most part, the workers were supportive of the packers and the owners in the efforts that they have done to make conditions as safe as possible inside of those plants. Jim, what are you hearing?
Well, what's amazing to me is usually you don't want to deal with OSHA. Okay, but they have not even released guidelines for these meat processing plants yet. You talk about behind the curve. What I think they're finally coming to grips of what they should have known to begin with, that you've got to have what Pam said. You've got to have those tests out there, not only the traditional test, but the 15-minute test. But you have to have the necessary lab support in order to take those tests to verify them. Then you have to have other aspects to, in order to give that worker the confidence that he or she should go into the plant.
And you know, I've been using that description of what we need to do for the workers, give them the confidence. And I think that's right, but I've been I think we need to modify that just a little bit. Give them the confidence and make sure that it's not false confidence. They need to be they need to be assured that when they go to work that they're going to be safe. And that feeling has to be legitimate. It can't be false to get them back in there and working. What's the situation up in Canada, Haney?
Exactly the same parallels. Exactly the same discussions. You know, we've got we're down to a crawl in terms of cattle kill. The two major plants have really struggled. Cargill and High River is idled for another week or so. JBS in Brooks is operating at one shift on some sort of limited basis. You know, I saw the Greeley plant the JBS plant in Greeley, Colorado is back to a shift today. They're all dealing with the same problem. And I'm wondering how we close this gap, Chip, on the union saying the plants need to do more. They need to make sure the workers are safe. The plants trying to get there and doing everything they can because they want to operate. Like, can we actually close that gap? Is there a point where we can get back to some sort of a full-scale operation? Because if we just stay at one shift, that's great, but it's still, we got a huge backup because we, you know, this whole system is designed to be running at full capacity. So how we get to back to full capacity, I think that is really, really left unanswered at this time, because if you read some of the stuff that's coming out of Denver this morning, there's, you know, the union is still saying, hey, the government hasn't doing totally what they said they were going to do. So we'll see if they're able actually to stay open. It's just super concerning.
Right. Absolutely.
I think we can get to yes. So testing, and then give those workers their personal protection. And I read some of the chicken production has asked for waivers, and they've sped up their lines instead of slowed them down.
Right.
And sequence shifts. There are answers there. But I think bottom line, treat these workers like the frontline workers with the respect that they deserve. And I also read this morning that the South Dakota governor has this study she wants people, workers in the packing plants to do that involves them taking hydrochloroquine, which has been advised against. So we do need guidelines out there, and we do need to protect these workers. Hormel's paying them another $500, some of them, and paying them in July if they show up and keep coming back. Right. But their lives and their families are at risk. Let's start treating them as equals.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know what? We need to think of them. I think that's a very good point, Pam. We need to think of them the same way we've been celebrating, you know, healthcare workers, truck drivers, people working on the railway to kind of keep everything going behind the scenes.
Absolutely.
These workers are a part of the chain.
Absolutely. We knew that the infection rates at these packing houses made that link in the chain extremely vulnerable. And here we are. We're living it. John Harith just let us know that IBP Tyson plant in Pasco, Washington is closed today, I believe. That's another 2,300 daily kill capacity in the Fed cattle market coming offline. When we were talking earlier with Jennifer Scheich from Farm Journal's Pork, talking about getting some of these plants back online, that has been happening. Some of the hogs that were supposed to go to Tyson and Waterloo actually were diverted to Columbus Junction in Iowa, that plant that was closed earlier. So we are seeing some plants that were closed are being able to reopen, and it's the confidence level that we can give them out there. Testing is happening. The governor in the state of Iowa will get 1,000 tests to any plant that needs it as quickly as they possibly can. Now you need to turn them around, and you need to get, they need to be the right tests, those quick tests, so that we can turn it around as quickly as possible. We're going to wrap up this free-for-all coming up next on AgriTalk.
Your next piece of equipment is on MachineryPete.com. Search equipment from dealerships across the country to find what you're looking for. Only on MachineryPete.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. It's a free-for-all. We've got Jim Wiesmeyer, Pam Johnson, Sean Haney rolling. We were talking about testing at the slaughterhouses and how it is important to make sure that the workers have the confidence to get back in those plants and keep the chain moving. Jim, you also mentioned robotics and mechanization. I asked Dr. Dermot Hayes from Iowa State University about that earlier this week on AgriTalk. He pointed to the Prestige facility up in north central Iowa as being the most sophisticated that has ever been built. The mechanization in that plant goes further than we've seen in any other plant, and they still need 1,000 workers in that plant to kill about 22,000. I think it's 20,000 plus. I mean, it's a big plant, but they still need all those workers, even with all the mechanization that has taken place in there. Now, Jim, another thing that Dermot talked about was the tariffs, the tariffs that the U.S. has on steel and aluminum coming from China into this country, which prompted the retaliatory tariffs in China, 25% on U.S. pork going back into China. Now, Dermot was arguing if we can get rid of these tariffs, all of a sudden we could start shipping whole carcass hogs back into China, and that would take so much of the pressure off of the situation that we're under right now. What's the status?
Well, it's actually going the other way, Chip, regretfully, because they're announcing some additional aluminum tariffs on a host of, you know, countries. Now, Greg Dowd, when we interviewed him last week, the chief ag negotiator at USDR, basically said the onus is on China. If they really need our pork, it's up to them to, you know, lift that counter, you know, retaliation measure. Plus, they can also go the exemption route, Chip. I think some of the pork that they bought from us has gone the exemption route. I'm not saying the item is not important, but if China really wants the pork, they can issue an exemption.
I think they really do. Pam, what's your take on this?
Well, I've made my take on it pretty clear the last whole year. Is I don't think it was the right thing to do in the first place was to put tariffs on there. Right. And to address trade only by addressing trade deficits did not make sense in trade balance, and then moving toward protectionism. And then always the argument about who pays the tariffs. Really, it's the American taxpayer, the American consumer pays the tariffs.
Yeah, it's so a consumption tax.
Putting more tariffs on is like, what's the definition of insanity, right? Yeah. You keep doing what didn't work in the first place. So, you know, the whole trade situation made agriculture and a whole bunch of sectors in a world of hurt last year. And now with the health crisis and COVID, it just makes it worse. So, like we've talked before, how are we going to come out of this? What did we learn from it? And hopefully we've learned some of these things.
Right. Right. You know, one of the things that we are learning, and they're going to be looking at the Prestige Farms slaughter facility up there very closely in the future to figure out how we can reduce the risk of absenteeism in these slaughterhouses, because the synchronization, that's one of the words that USDA Secretary Sonny Perdue stuck in my head last week, talking about the synchronization of the supply chain, because when that baby pig is born, we know the week that it's going to go to slaughter. And with it's even more specific on the poultry side of things. Now, the beef side of things, we can stretch that out. We've got a better system. We can hold some of that slaughter need back. But boy, we need to see it there too. And so we've disrupted the chain from start to finish now, and they're going to be looking at ways of getting rid of that, the risk of disruption, as much as they possibly can going
several
forward.
Things there, Chip. This is why the pork industry needs a higher direct payments as a result of what you just said. They're more at risk. I remembered in 2018, JBS purchased a controlling share of Scott Technology Robots. That one, if you were sitting on a board of directors for a meat packer, meat for processing company, I want to be in those hearings in the future, because if they don't accelerate the investment, a lot of money into your robots after what we're going through right now, I don't think they have a good board. Watch that technology really develop now.
Real quick, we just got a message from Jennifer Scheich. Indiana Packers in Delphi, Indiana is closing on Monday. So, I mean, we're gonna see another week of what we just went through, and there's going to be shutdowns, there's going to be reopenings. And speaking of reopenings, Jim, when do we restart the economy?
Beginning in May. I think the big experiment is going to be Georgia, because it's high risk. Now, if that were to work out, wow. If it doesn't, it's going to be a lot of holding back by a number of, Republican governors who tend to be more aggressive than their Democratic, counterparts. But from what we know now, Chip, we'll begin to roll out opening up this great company beginning in May, and then transition then to a more workable economy in June and July. That's what most people tell
me. I find it interesting that the protests to restart and reopen have made their way to California now. It seemed like it was a Midwest event, middle of the country event, but they've made their way to California now. So that is a pretty solid message. What about up in Canada, Haney?
The province of Saskatchewan released its 5-point plan very slow, like still no gatherings of 15, even into stage 3. So it's a very slow process up here.
Okay, Pam, I know with this weather that we've got, it's not going to be hard for you to stay busy in the week ahead, is it?
No, and it's great work. So my answer is, when are we going to open? All of us, including the decision makers, listen to the scientists and the epidemiologists, and not a president that tells you to inject or in.
We're not
bleach.
It's going to have to be scientific based. There is no doubt about it. A medical end of the crisis would be ideal. You guys have a great weekend and week ahead. We'll talk to you again next week. Got to come back this afternoon. Got Brian Doherty from Stewart Peterson.